Hey, everybody, it's Connor Eldridge back here with another episode of Shut Up and Sing, the Artist Manifesto. Y'all know this is the place where artists of all kinds speak up and speak out, and the platform that we have for all of us, artists in particular, but for all of us, whatever our art may be, to make a difference in the world. We're fired up to be here today with you and with Sarah Voss. Sarah is awesome. If you don't know her music, you are missing out, and you need to go check it out today. I've got so much I want to tell y'all about her. She's an incredible singer-songwriter, musician, and I'm really excited for y'all to get to know her today and get to know some of the causes and politics behind her lyrics and a lot of the passions in her heart that fuel her music. She's the lead singer, guitarist, and songwriter for the Dead Horses. That's a band she leads with her musical partner and bandmate, Daniel Wolf. Their music is powerful and conversational, and in my humble opinion, represents the very best of folk, Americana, roots, music, whatever term you want to throw in there, it's good. And she lives in Wisconsin, is a Wisconsin native, and makes her home in Milwaukee now. A little bit more about the Dead Horses. They've released a ton of albums and tracks. Their most recent album is My Mother, the Moon. Go check it out on Apple or Spotify or wherever today. They've charted on the Americana Top 50, which is honestly my favorite listing of songs and albums. They've had over 20 million listens on Spotify, which is like a lot, and for good reason, because their song Turntable that has that number of listens is an outstanding song and been featured all over the place. Amazon, Apple, lots of different featured podcasts and lists. They've toured extensively, as many as 120 shows a year, making their way around the country. Lots of people have taken notice of them over the past several years. Rolling Stone named them an artist you should know. And so we think you should know them and know a lot more about them. They've been profiled in Billboard and everywhere. Before coronavirus really hit and made things unsafe, they were touring heavily, and in past years have toured with Mandolin Orange, Tramp by Turtles. They've opened for The Who, and they've appeared at Red Rocks. What a great venue that is. And really all over the country, South by Southwest, Northwest String Summit, Red Wing Roots, Red Ants Pants, Bristol Rhythm and Roots. And the last thing I want to tell you about them before I quit talking and Sarah tells us so many great things that we've got in store today is that one of her last shows with Daniel and the Dead Horses was a special appearance in Fayetteville, Arkansas for our festival here called Roots in Northwest Arkansas. I love Roots. I love the folks that run it. And y'all put on a great show. And little did we know at that time, the world would change so much in the coming days and weeks. And that was the last time I saw live music before everything shut down, impacting Sarah and the Dead Horses and so many musicians and so many others. We're going to get into that. Sarah, I want to thank you for coming to Fayetteville and for all you do, because your lyrics and the music of the Dead Horses have stayed with me throughout the last couple of months. They've had the perfect blend of peace and beauty with some punch. We're going to talk about that punch today. I'm excited for everybody listening to check out her music. She's awesome. Sarah, we're glad to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Connor. It was a fun time talking to you in Fayetteville that evening, and I'm excited to talk today.
Well, great. Me too. Well, I guess, Sarah, a good place to start is that, you know, so much of your songwriting and music is inspirational or cause-driven or political or whatever you want to call it. So how do those things come together for you in your lyrics and in your songs?
I think that the songs and the lyrics are a reflection of kind of what's mulling around in my head all the time and in my heart. So the fact that they're political or talk about nature or anything like that is just an indicator of what I'm thinking about day to day, you know?
Makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you think about that, so many of your songs are overtly political or directly political, and so many of them, you know, use metaphor or imagery or scenes. As folks listen to your music, what do you wish you could convey about the process of producing that product that you then provide to them?
I think that I'm wanting each person listening to the song to have their own relationship with it, like kind of in their own way. And we've talked about this a little bit before, how art and, you know, whether it's music or whatever kind of artistry it is, the piece, the thing that you, you know, quote unquote, create is really not of you. It's kind of everything. So, and this is where it gets sticky when you start talking about songwriting, is difficult because you're then making it, I'm making it about me. If I start kind of, you know, going behind the scenes and explaining, when really I want each person to have their own relationship to the song.
Well, that's such a humble, good place to come from, Sarah, because you obviously are extremely talented and we all benefit from that. But I love how you talk about that, because for me, when I listen to your music, when I listen to it live and when I've listened to it since so many times, and really all your albums, it's sort of a blend of peacefulness and beauty with definitely some cause-driven stuff that we're going to dive into specifics, and some nature imagery that puts you in a good place, but not a good place of nothing, a good place of something. And I've loved how you talked about that being really something that you feel doesn't belong to you. So tell us a little bit more about that, because that's a special place you get to, right?
Yeah, it really is. And this is where, too, it gets so strange. I think people love asking about, I'd say the most common question I get about songwriting is what's your process? And it's such a difficult question to answer, because I think for me, the whole process is to not have a process. You know, it's to just not get in the way of whatever is going to come out that day, not be judgmental of it. And then kind of like creating a practice where you have the space to be creative in that way often enough. And then maybe every so often you'll get something that you'll reapproach the next day and you'll like, you know, yeah. And you'll want to keep working on. Man, can you hear that in the back?
That's great. Yeah.
I live in downtown Milwaukee, so there's always lots of noise. And
maybe
volume.
It's just my mentality, but it sounded like somebody was playing something down there. I hope they are.
It is.
Oh, that's
like
great.
That song, like Rhythm of the Night. Yeah, there's this Mercy Housing building across the street from me. So there's a lot of interesting folks that live there. And they throw like block parties every so often.
That's
great. Really cool.
That's great. Well, Sarah, I think about, you know, in this vein, and we're going to dive into a couple of songs in specifics, but, you know, I think about this place we're talking about. A couple of songs that really jump out to me, two of my favorites, Golden Sky, where some of your lyrics are, sometimes I wish I was a leaf, sometimes I wish I was a tall tree, and just really powerful. And you really dive into this special place that you're talking about that's a communal place.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sometimes I wish I was a leaf. Sometimes I wish I was a tall tree. Sometimes I wish I was a deep sea swimmer.
And I wanted to mention Deep Blue Sea too, because in that one, you sort of blend the falling leaf at the end with Brother, You're Not Alone, which is part of the refrain, I think, in that song. And so, are those two pretty good examples of what we're talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, and this is something I've struggled with, that a lot of the music that I've put out is sad. You know, it really, there's been attempts at making upbeat music and less serious music, but it's sad. And I try to not be apologetic about that, because that's just what comes out. I'm not sad all the time, but I am a pretty serious person. It's just the way that I am. But what I think redeems that sorrow that's so prevalent in the music is the sense of togetherness. And I think that's what makes our live shows really special, is that you're in this room with other people feeling something and not feeling alone, because you realize that you're here with other people. If I could boil down my spiritual beliefs into one thing, it's that I am not separate than everything around me. And I think, yeah, I think that shines through a little bit in the songs.
Oh, I think it's great. And for what it's worth, I think you've got the perfect blend of stuff. Your music seems to me, just for me, you got to have a little bit of sorrow to make it real, right? And you got to deal with suffering in this world to really get to a happy place that's honest. And that just exudes in your lyrics for me. I think of what you're talking about, you know, what you talked about at the end there is another point that is in a lot of your lyrics, that we're all in this together, that strangers that you meet on the street or that you see, whoever they may be, and especially if they're struggling, if they're homeless or if they're in dire straits, that we're all in this together and we're all brothers and sisters. And I think of American Poor, and so we should dive into that one because it is clearly one of my favorites. And I think it's not a stretch to say that's very political, right? This song?
That absolutely is, yeah.
You've got so many good lines in that song, but the one we're talking about now is, there can be no greater thing than to love a stranger. And that's exactly what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the answer to everything that we're dealing with as a world, as a planet. Compassion and empathy for other human beings and for all of life around us. If that's kind of the golden rule, which it is, literally, I think that making decisions based off of that is going to go a long ways. You know, think about it this way. I'm sure that that comes off to some people very like hippie, very mushy and gushy, but I'm actually more of a practical thinker than anything else. And I think that's just like the fairest, most pragmatic way of having a worldview is, let's take care of everybody.
Amen. American Poor is such a call to action to me to be there for all of humanity.
There can be no greater thing than love a stranger. Be no greater thing. American proud, American poor.
Treat the people. So when you think about the lyrics of that song and the place that that song comes from for you, Sarah, what issues does that take you to? I mean, the song certainly references some issues, but share with us the real struggles of people in the world that you feel emanate from that song.
Well, what I was thinking of just now is immigration. You know, why is my life more important than someone that's trying to emigrate here? It's not, you know, my life is not more important than theirs. So why wouldn't we welcome them? And obviously, immigration is a very complicated issue, and most things are, you know, like most controversial things are, but I think we get lost looking at things that just get in the way of finding solutions. We don't need to deny people entrance here. What we need to do is figure out ways to make it work, because obviously we don't have a system in place that works, but denying them entrance is not the right thing to do. And I find it so bizarre that a lot of the people that are so kind of anti-immigrant are the people who say they believe in the golden rule, they have Christian values. Then why do you think that your life is more important than a refugee? So that one comes to mind. I definitely wrote American Poor during the 2016 election, and as a couple other more of the political songs on there, on that record, My Mother the Moon, and just kind of being, I guess, in a similar place that I am now, just kind of in shock of who Donald Trump is and what his being elected says about our country and the place that we're in. It's pretty fascinating.
Oh my gosh. We could, and maybe we will spend the rest of the podcast talking about that. It is really incredible, you know, sticking with this issue of immigration, just the hate that is out there and stirred up. And so I appreciate you for taking that on, both in your songwriting and on this platform and elsewhere, because it takes courage to speak up against that, as you just did. And, you know, it's so saddening. As you were talking, I was thinking, you're so right. And it's just so heartbreaking that in the United States of America in 2020 and in 2016, starting really then, or at least being stoked then, is this just feeling of hate, feeling of superiority, feeling of not being in it together, almost the opposite of what we were just talking about. And we've got to pull ourselves back to a more positive feeling of we are all in this together. And that's certainly not felt from the current president of the United States. And he certainly doesn't go out of his way or do anything to advocate for what we're talking about here. You know, American Poor cuts to the heart of so many issues like that. I mean, healthcare, homelessness, you know, when you think poverty in general. Sarah, what was going through your mind then and what goes through your mind now when you sing that song about those issues?
I think a lot about privilege and being poor. Being poor is so exhausting, right? It's just, it's so exhausting. And when we play the song American Poor, I think I'm kind of in a place where I'm walking around Bayview, which is a neighborhood of Milwaukee, and it is that election time. And I am thinking for the first time about, I think I'm thinking far enough outside of myself. I think I really started paying attention right around the 2016 election. So I'm kind of new to the game in a lot of ways. And a lot of images flash into my mind. There's one, and I think I put this one in Modern Man. This is one thing that is kind of cool to talk about the songwriting. I like to sneak little like vignettes into songs that probably don't make sense if you're just hearing them, but they're like little memories that I want to live on. There's one in, I think it's in Modern Man, where I talk about this woman, and the story is that I was in Nashville and we were recording My Mother the Moon, and there was massive storms this one day. So we actually had to stop recording because you could hear the rain and the thunder in the recording. So we kind of paused for the day, and I needed new shoes. So I got dropped off like somewhere downtown. I was just going to walk around, and I love Nashville, and look for boots, but not cowboy boots. And I realized that you cannot buy boots in Nashville that are not cowboy boots. So I was just walking around all day, and I ended up getting like drenched too, and it had rained a lot. I saw this woman approaching me from like a couple blocks down, and she looked like she probably had a mental illness. She might have been homeless, hard to say. Had a bunch of bags, didn't look very clean. And we were just about to kind of cross paths on the sidewalk, and this car on the road drove around the corner and just somehow like drove through a puddle in such a way that it literally like engulfed her. Oh. Like she just got drenched, and I was literally like 5 feet away, and I just saw the look on her face, and it just like broke me how sad I felt for her. Cause it literally would suck to get covered in from a puddle, but also her situation from what I could observe was also just broke me. Like I don't want anyone to feel that way, but that's also, it's such a complicated thing, because that's also a very judgmental thought, because maybe she likes the way that she lives. I don't know. I can only guess. But it was such a moving, I don't know why, such a moving moment that I threw it in a song. And then it comes back every time we play it. And I hope that she's doing well. It hasn't gotten drenched by any puddles lately.
Couldn't sleep last night. I just kept thinking about the clocks in my grandmother's kitchen. About the warming down in Nashville. So to a bone now, I'm walking around San Fran. Everything's gone.
Thank you for sharing that, Sarah. That's a really special part of what we're talking about, right? I mean, it's not just about issue advocacy in songs or in running for office or in just trying to be a good member of our society. It's about people. And it comes from a place of empathy, this desire to change the world for the better. And you express that so well as an artist and in your music. And I really appreciate the subtle point that you made just then about being empathetic without being judgmental so important. And it sounds like that's something that when you have imagery you want to live on or things that you write about, that's a key part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Being judgmental, you know, you have to judge things, you know, in your life and make judgments. And that's how our brains evolve. That's how we perceive the world. But whenever you're dealing with people, especially, I think you always have to keep in mind that people are so beautifully fluid, and this thing one day and this thing the other. And yeah, you just never know. Maybe that woman was like the happiest woman in the world, and maybe she appreciate, maybe she thought that was a cool shower or something. I really don't think so. But yeah, you just always gotta keep that in mind, you know.
It's just a good practice to not judge folks, because you can get over into that. And it is a practice, right? And I love that empathy. And that is such a powerful line. So digging into this song, Modern Man, a little bit, I would dare say Modern Man and American Poor are the ones who really throw it right out there and leave no doubt as to really the call to action that you as a songwriter are making for us as a society. And I love these songs. Just diving into Modern Man a little bit more, one of the first lines in the song is, "Show me a monster as our highest hand. He's a puppet too.
Show me a monster as our highest hand. Oh, he's a puppet too. Oh, he's a puppet too."
So I'm really curious, Sarah, who might that be?
that's Donald Trump. And again, yeah, this was during the 2016 election, walking around Milwaukee, seeing this homemade sign on somebody's lawn that had a picture of Donald Trump and just said "scariest monster ever." And that really struck home with me and then came through on that song. And he's terrifying. He's like the personification of some of the most frightening things about our country and our people and our planet, our times, you know, everything. I will say, Connor, that a lot of times when we've played that song since, so the line is, yeah, he's a puppet too. And I thought about that. I mean, it's almost like actually he's kind of less of a puppet than a lot of other politicians, so it seems, right? Like he kind of does whatever he wants. Like, I don't know who I would think the person is pulling any strings with him. And I started singing victim instead. He's a victim too. And it always feels weird to say that, to sing that. No one's ever asked me about it that I can recall. I always feel a little guilty about it because it goes against this kind of righteous liberal feeling that we get, right? Like, it's hard not to. It's really hard not to, but you got to acknowledge that it's there. But yeah, I have empathy for him too. He's the way he is for a reason, right? Like, he's a victim too.
That's such a powerful point you're making there. And I'm so glad we're diving into this in this way, because for me, and this is one of the things I love about the political part of your songwriting, for me, it is possible to be a respectful and strong critic of systemic issues and of policies of individual politicians. And to do that in a way that's not hateful, that doesn't give in and become part of the problem by being full of hate. And that's exactly what you're talking about. And so that line, he's a puppet to, or he's a victim to, for me, and I wonder if this is what you mean, for me, you know, means what I took when I heard that before I heard you say what you just said is, well, he's a monster, but he's also a product of this systemic environment we're in and of his own personal journey. And so if we're going to have empathy for all people, that should not, by definition, exclude anyone. I think it's a really great point you're making, Sarah.
Yeah, it's cool that you kind of, that puppet still meant that a similar thing for you. That's cool.
For sure. And all that being said, we could still jump out there and say, we really hope that he gets to retire to one of his golf courses January of next year, right?
Yeah, or maybe prison.
Oh gosh, I you know, we're in an election year this year. So on this topic, I would love to know your current thoughts on where we are in 2020.
Wow, man, we are in a place most of us could never have guessed. In a strange way, it seems like there's some more optimism about Donald Trump actually being defeated, which is super bizarre. It'd be wonderful to see the Democrats kind of come together in a way that they haven't been able to yet, which could happen through facing this monumental crisis that we're dealing with. I'm a huge Elizabeth Warren fan. I think we messed it up big time when we didn't see her value, in my humble opinion. But I also, I'm just really hoping for people to kind of wake up to the importance of local politics as well. And can you imagine in the last midterm what would have happened if we hadn't had the blue wave? I mean, it's crazy to think about. Yeah, it really is. It's easy to get cued into the big story that's presented in the media. And although I feel like people who that happens to the most, they don't really actually listen to the news that much. Like they turn it on every once in a while and they're like, ah, just part of that, you know, the media doing that again. And it's like, if you actually listen and watch and read every day, it feels a lot more trustworthy. It feels a lot less biased. I feel like you can more easily pinpoint where the bias is. And let's keep in mind that no media can be unbiased. It's impossible. It's humans reporting. And, you know, you'll hear people say, well, demographically, reporters, they're way more often Democrats. And so, you know, they skew the news. And my reaction to that is like, well, chicken or the egg, like, are they Democrats because they know more about how things are working and whatever.
Yes. Yeah, man. The answer to that, in my opinion. So, Sarah, you know, thinking about Wisconsin, first off, that issue that you're pointing out, it frustrates me on this topic that people get in a loop of whatever news they watch on either side, and they begin to look for self-justification of their already held beliefs as opposed to questioning what they're hearing and thinking, okay, what are the facts here? Is that right? Well, let me check out this other source. I think that intellectual honesty and that ability to put facts on a board and talk about what's true and what's not and be willing to have an honest conversation versus an I'm right, you're wrong conversation is just so critical. You touched on that a minute ago when you talked about the need to constructively solve problems. And it sounds like that's sort of the way you think too.
Absolutely. Actually, just a couple days ago, the Wisconsin Supreme Court overturned our governor's orders to stay at home, which honestly, our numbers here have been all right. And we were headed in that direction anyways. But, you know, it was a big political move, definitely partisan. And Wisconsin is, you know, a scary kind of testing ground for a lot of Republican Party shenanigans right now. And so the order's overturned. All these bars instantly open up, like the same night that this happens. Like they're all ready to go. So, you know, we see all these pictures in the media of these rural Wisconsin bars filled with people like shoulder to shoulder, you know, drinking Miller Lights. And it's so saddening. There's no desire to try to do it in a safe way, you know, in this picture of bars opening the night that they're allowed to. And I've been getting in these debates with people about this. And they're saying, well, these are small business owners. We got to let them open up. And that's the whole thing. Like, I'm not denying that this is cataclysmic to the economy and to small business owners. And I don't know what the answer is, but the answer is not to just let them open with no safety measures. So it's like we get stuck arguing between those two things when really the question should be, how do we help them survive? How do we help them survive? Because what we're doing right now is not working. And how do we get them open in a safe way? Not they should be able to open or they shouldn't be able to open. And the way that we do that is looking at numbers and listening to specialists and people that study this, and it's their job to know it. And it's scary. Why can't we be using that energy to be really creative about how to help businesses survive?
Gosh, you're so right. And it just, it's frustrating because you want to say, why is there all this negative energy and desire to sort of thumb your nose at what has clearly been documented to be a medical issue? Now, I don't think anybody has any idea. There's a lot still unknown, right? I mean, there's a lot we don't know about COVID-19 and about this time that we're in. But what we can know is that we ought to do everything we can to follow the guidance and be safe, and that we should respect the government that is, I think, in many states anyway, in some states, maybe I should say, trying to both keep people safe and help small business owners and the economy. And that's a balance. But gosh, no, Sarah, it's frustrating me too, because it's just not too much to ask to wear a mask and keep your distance. It's just really not. No. I mean, and if there is even a small chance that that saves lives, and I think we know enough to know that, we can debate what percentage chance and what the fatality rates are and the accuracy of the numbers. We can have a whole debate about that. But we know that this disease kills people and that there's no vaccine for it yet. So is it too much to ask to take some basic measures to keep people safe? That's my feeling anyway.
Yeah, and I think the mask thing too, and I know it's uncomfortable, but I think it's also, it helps. I just notice that I'm more conscientious when I have it on of everything, of not touching my face, of staying 6 feet away from people. So it's just, it's a sign that, hey, I'm adhering to these rules and I'm doing the best I can because I care about people. It's not a thing out of fear, which is how it's framed very often. Like, y'all are sheep that are just afraid of the sickness. And it's like, no, like I'm trying to act compassionately and reasonably, not out of fear. In fact, your motivations seem out of fear that the government's going to take over or that they're going to take away your guns or...
Oh my gosh. No kidding. You're so right. And just to be clear to everybody listening, I've got to know Sarah a little bit. And Sarah and I both are very much in favor of getting together and drinking beer in a safe way, right?
Yeah.
So we definitely want to support all the bars and restaurants and music venues and everybody out there. But this issue we're talking about of just really being cognizant of our fellow man and what we need to do to keep people safe is, it's got to stay in the forefront. So Sarah, thinking about COVID-19 and these strange times we're in, I did want to mention that your partner in Milwaukee is a nurse, and she's continued to go in and do her job in helping to treat cancer patients, I believe. And I wanted to say thank you to her and thank you to you for being in a home with someone who is on the front lines of a great medical need. And so I wanted to say thank you to you and her for that and just ask what perspective that has given.
Thank you, Connor. It's been interesting. I've actually been really encouraged by the response from her hospital. She works at Fredert, and she works on a like post-surgical unit that does really crazy, cool, weird surgeries. It's not all cancer, but they do these insane things. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So they have people, some, you know, coming from all over the country for these surgeries. So they are very compromised patients. So actually her unit has been far less busy. And I think that's been the case in a lot of different hospitals where they're just not doing things that they usually do. So she's kind of dealing with less shifts, but she's staying informed about what's happening at the rest of the hospital. And from my vantage, it seems like they're handling it really well. They're being really safe. They're being really cautious. The numbers have not been terrifying here, which is great. It seems like they reacted in a way that was just very professional, cautious, and science-based. And that makes me really happy. And I hope it continues that way. You know, I was afraid at the beginning of this that she would see a lot of kind of terrifying stuff, but that hasn't been the case yet. And I'm really thankful for that.
That's great. Well, thank you to her and to you again for that. And in this time, being a musician, I mean, COVID has certainly affected the dead horses, right? I mean, would you share with everybody sort of your perspective on really just the devastation to musicians and to the whole industry?
Yeah, I think about Nashville because not too long before all this happened, you know, Nashville got hit by those crazy tornadoes in a very devastating way. And then a few weeks later, the whole industry is shook up this way. You know, Dan and I have been building our small business for about 10 years. And it is crazy to think that within a few months, we could just be bankrupt. Not to speak specifically about our money situation, but we do make the high majority of our net income is touring. And that's just something that we can't do right now. We were about a week into a 6-week tour. That's when we met you. And it was such a crazy experience. One that I know I'll never forget. Because we're going from town to town. And we're actually in the South, which made it kind of interesting too. And I love the South. I do so much. I'm not from the South, but I feel like maybe in another life I was. Because I just, I don't know. But I was listening to the news. I'd been following coronavirus since December, January. But it's so funny though, even me, like, you know, when it was in China, it was like, oh, it's in China. It's so far away. And then even when it was on the West Coast, it was like, oh, so far away. And you just every day kind of watch it creeping closer and closer. And I'm telling my bandmates, you guys, like, this is really crazy. You know, like we're talking to people at shows and they just can't. It was so hard to grasp as being real, because don't we all kind of have these ideas or fears or maybe musings on like what could happen in the world? I mean, that's reflected in movies. We have like apocalyptic movies and pandemic movies, and you kind of wonder, like, is life really secure? Is it as secure as we've made it out to be? And then you have the situation that comes up that kind of is telling of maybe your fear about this was right all along. Maybe the ground is not so firm beneath your feet and it's hard to accept. So South by Southwest got canceled, which was shocking.
And y'all were going to that, right? You were going to
perform. And it's definitely like very much a networking thing as well. So we were able to cancel our lodging plans there and stay with some friends outside of Houston. They were just so kind to us and let us stay in their house while we kind of figured out what was next. And then one day, I think it was when the Bay Area started locking down, that's when we were like, okay, like we should probably go home, you know. And then pretty quickly after that, everything canceled through the summer. And it's weird, you know, luckily we don't have any employees. I can't imagine, you know, we're the main people that live off of this business. So, and we're both young and healthy, so we have options. But I just think about businesses that maybe you have 200 employees and they support their families off of your business. It's just hard to fathom.
So
yeah, I can't. It's... I also, though, I strongly believe that we have enough resources. We are smart enough. We have enough technology to take care of everybody. I always said that before this, and I'll say it now. We can do that. We still can. But it's going to take a functioning government.
Back to that, which is at the heart of this podcast, by the way. It does come back to that, right? I mean... To make a difference, to do all the things you advocate for directly and indirectly in your lyrics, it does come back to advocating for those things and working for change in many different ways, not just in government, but that's obviously a big part of it. And you're touching on providing healthcare to everybody and really making sure that we can take care of everyone in this country. We do have so much, and there's no reason we shouldn't be able to provide the highest level of care to all people. And I think that's the
Absolutely.
Point you're making.
Yeah, I firmly believe that. I think, again, if we're setting kind of like standards to go back to having healthcare, good food and water, clean water. I mean, it's crazy that that's a thing. Clean water? I mean, what the hell? Like,
who's against that?
It's unbelievable. Like, some people don't deserve that or what? Like, clean water. But yeah, people should have healthcare, clean water, and shelter. And not that everyone needs to have their own home even, but a safe lodging and safe place to live. I think that we can do that. We can do that for everybody.
Absolutely, we can. And before we leave the issue of COVID's effect on the music industry, I want to make sure to stop here at this point and say everyone should totally go to deadhorses.net or listen to the Dead Horses on Spotify. I will tell you, I just bought two records of yours today. I wanted to buy the record when you were in Fayetteville, but I got to talking to you and we got into conversation. I walked out and I thought, well, crap, I forgot to buy the record. So I bought both records today. I would encourage everybody to do that because we need your voice, Sarah. We need what you and Dan do together. And so I can promise you, we're going to get you back to Fayetteville for a good paying show as soon as this thing lifts. I know folks feel that way across the country. So what you're saying just a minute ago takes me back to the Modern Man song, where the modern man is a factory. And I'm interested to hear you talk about that line, because to me, it really is such a great way, it's the title of the song, to talk about how the systemic issues really do affect people. And we have this system that, because of greed or whatever in this country, doesn't provide the baseline quality of life to people that our system could and should in this wealthy country that we have. We still have healthcare issues. We still have hunger issues. We still have homelessness issues. Is that where you were going with that?
Yeah, absolutely. That there's this kind of narrative that you have to sell, especially in working class, that you have to sell your life 50, 60 hours a week, backbreaking work, to have decent healthcare. That your life becomes about how much you can produce, I just disagree with. I don't think it has to be that way. Now, of course, I do want to say the idea of working hard and the benefits that come along with that, I think they're intrinsic to us as human beings, but that somebody else would be gaining so much from that while you're still kind of struggling to survive seems so wrong to me, and seems like something that we should be able to overcome already. But you're kind of like worked into exhaustion in such a way that you just surrendered to it. And then for what? So that you can retire when you're 70? Like, you know, these things, I think that we get lost and don't even consider that there could be a different way. And that way, I think we are kind of like sheep sometimes. We need people questioning that. And again, that's not to say that hard work isn't valuable and that we need people working jobs, but especially what we're seeing with this COVID-19 stuff is that which jobs are the ones that make the world go around? Which jobs fuel the economy? It's the restaurant workers, it's the grocery workers, it's a lot of the people that serve. And it's a lot of the same people that are working paycheck to paycheck and can't afford to go to the doctor. They might have insurance. And I can't believe I never heard more debate about this in the campaign so far. And we talk about healthcare all the time and like how many people are covered, but I am in this category. I have health insurance and it's affordable to have. I can't afford to use it. I can't afford to actually do anything with it. So I have this small monthly payment, but if I actually need to go to the doctor, it could be pretty devastating. So
Doesn't do you a whole lot of good.
It's right. Disaster insurance at best. And that needs to be part of the discussion. I don't know if someone like Joe Biden understands that. I don't know if he's ever been, I hope he does. I hope someone has told him, but I don't know why they don't talk about it.
Yeah. You hit on some great issues. Thinking about, as you know, I served in the Obama administration as a U.S. attorney and then ran for the Senate. And I think back to the Obamacare debate, and that fortunately catapulted us forward in healthcare, but it didn't solve all the problems. There are still a lot of problems, and we still need a great debate in this country. I think there's a desire by some, perhaps more in one party than the other, the Republican Party, to just say, oh, well, we don't want to talk about healthcare again. Didn't that other bill fix all that? And our Republican governors, some Republican governors have just renamed it, and taken credit for it, which is fine. Whatever gets folks good health care, we'll do it. But we do need a next generation, you might say, debate about health care, because you bring up a great point. I mean, what is your health insurance that you have today other than super catastrophic insurance, what is it if you can't use it for things that you really should go to the doctor for? And then you have COVID hit, and obviously those needs highlight. You hit on a great point, Sarah, and I really hope that as Joe Biden starts into the stretch run of the rest of this election, that we do hear a healthcare debate and we do hear some solutions for how to make sure we get better care for everybody out there, because the Republican Party's not talking about that right now. I'm taken back to American Poor, where this idea, you reference healthcare, you also reference the opioid crisis and pills a little bit in that song, which is, of course, a whole other tangent of terrible effect on so many people. But this line, people are working silently, sweating in their own salty sea. I love that, because it's what you were talking about just a minute ago. And I take it that people are working silently. That's an observation. That's not all bad and not all good. But sweating in their own salty sea, to me, is like tread water, is the image I get in my head. So I just think it's beautiful. So thank you for that line.
People are working silently, sweating in their own salty sea. Well, they're setting fire out in the streets. American proud, American poor. Left my innocence.
So I grew up in kind of an interesting, my dad was a pastor, so we were not technically working class, I guess that means, but you were definitely like middle, lower class. But a lot of the people around me growing up were wealthier than we were, kind of thing. And then as I grew a little bit older, parents had to declare bankruptcy. They were two of a lot of people in our country at that time that were declaring bankruptcy. And it was later on, like after college, I worked in a convenience store that was kind of a pretty cool convenience store, though we had like groceries and other great stuff, but right in like an industrial park. So I worked there for 5 years. It was when I was first starting the band and was kind of juggling both at the same time, but I served blue collar workers. Actually, it was for Oshkosh Corporation, which they produce a lot of military vehicles, which is kind of crazy, but
Oshkosh, Wisconsin, right?
Yep. So yeah, I was serving these blue collar workers, and it was my first taste of kind of like, you know, what is that? And also I was blue collar then at that point serving them. And I always enjoyed that job because I felt like I was serving. And I think that, especially in My Mother, the Moon, the whole album, I think I try to make references a lot towards how service is the highest. What could you really do that's better than that, than to serve somebody else?
And you make this point in American Poor, you highlight it so poignantly and powerfully. You say we treat our people who serve us like shit. When I heard that line performed by you, it makes you, the listener, kind of flinch a little bit, right? And it's so powerful because it makes you think, oh my gosh, that is so prevalent in this country. We really got to make sure we treat people that we encounter who are doing their jobs, that we treat them well. It's a powerful line.
Thank you. Yeah, I always even flinch a little bit when I sing it live, because it kind of feels like I'm kind of saying like, shame on you. And I don't think using shame is ever a good thing, but in more of a motherly way, I hope it comes off like, you know.
Oh, I think it does, Sarah. Like, for what it's worth, I took it because you say we. So the power of the royal we. It's not a preachy line. It's more of a, hey, let's collectively take notice here.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's. Yeah. I very strongly believe that.
Far be it for me to tell you about your own song. That's what I took from it, and I love it. Well, hey, I know we don't have a ton of time left, but I got a couple other things to ask you. So I definitely want to talk to you about whether anybody has ever said to you, shut up and sing, or anything like that. Has that happened to you?
No, but I've had, I guess it depends what you mean by that question. When you say, like, what do you mean exactly when you say shut up and sing?
Well, I just mean, have you had fans during or after a show or on social media even say to you, gosh, I love your music, but I really didn't like your political point?
Okay, that's where I thought you were going with it. Yes, I have had that happen. It's interesting too. We were working for a while with this booking agent who was really hooking us up. He was someone, you know, that you kind of wanted on your side. Man, there's so many politics in being a musician. And I know he felt like that. So I was always nervous when he would come to our shows that he's not going to like that, you know, and he has every right to have his own opinion about that too, obviously. And so that was one thing. But one time at a show, we were opening up for this awesome Colorado band called Elephant Revival. We were playing a huge performing arts center in maybe in Grand Junction, Colorado, or somewhere around there. And we played our opening set, and we were a trio at that time with a mandolin player, upright bass, me, and we played in these condenser mics, and it was just this really cool, intimate, it was a lot of space for the message to come through. And we did American Poor, I think. And at some point I had referenced the election that had happened semi-recently, the 2016 election. I never mentioned a name or anything like that. I never even said Trump or anything. I thought it was so G-rated to barely, maybe even like a wuss to, you know, kind of be political, but just not do it. And after, but also the other thing to keep in mind, like, I would say maybe 90 to 95% of the people in that room were probably in agreement with me too. And after the show, I'm slinging merch in the back, and this woman came up to me and just said, leave the politics out of it. Like, I come here to enjoy being around other people and enjoy music, and that's not what folk music is about. I know. And I said, like, lady, like, no, I didn't call her lady. People do not like being called lady. I just said, well, I think you and I have a different definition of folk music, and I'm sorry if that made you feel anything negative. It probably was really uncomfortable for her. And then she went on to buy, like, I don't know why I remember this. We were selling, you know, all this music and then, you know, t-shirts, and she bought like this tote bag. And I remember cynically thinking to myself, like, of course she didn't buy the music. But it was cool. She's, you know, supported us. But yeah, it's weird. So like, there's so much in common about politicians and musicians, but politicians are expected to talk about politics and have a platform and message. Whereas musicians, especially in the bluegrass, which we used to be a lot more in the bluegrass scene than Americana and folk, but they are, and this has been one of my biggest struggles, they are so often expected to be like, just like a feel good, you know, come up and make us feel good kind of thing. And that is just not my calling. It's just not my calling at all. And I struggle sometimes just feeling like, where is our niche? I'm not quite sure.
Well, to quote your lyrics back to you, you're not alone, because, you know, gosh, I couldn't agree with you more. And part of the genesis of this podcast has been just really wanting to support artists like you and give a platform to lift up and celebrate where your lyrics come from and your courage and willingness to write them and to speak out through your art. And so it really is so powerful. And, you know, I follow other folks that I know, you know, too, like Brandi Carlile and Jason Isbell and Ryan Bingham, who really have incredibly political messages in their songs. They don't run from it at all. They do exactly what you do. I've seen several of those artists lately have people say, shut up and sing to them. And their response has been, hey, this is where my music comes from, and this is how I write. And if you think my music's not political, you hadn't been listening.
Yeah, right.
And so I love that you have this special place in so many of the artists, singer-songwriters or otherwise, that I follow do too. Thank you for all that. So who are your folk sort of icons, and how have they engaged with positive change and in politics and their music?
I think the first person that always comes to mind when I get asked this question is Bob Dylan. And I don't know if,
sure.
You know, I don't know if that's because I think my first, like the first time I really saw anyone doing something that I knew really, really deep down that I wanted to do, it was Bob Dylan. Like, he was the guy with the acoustic guitar and the harmonica conveying a message through a microphone to a group of people that were waking up, right?
Yeah.
Like, era, like 60s, 70s, like people were, a generation was waking up, and that's what I knew I wanted to do. And he also did it in a really abstract way too. That was political, but like in a weird kind of hard to pin down sort of way. So he's been an influence, obviously. Neil Young still, like, wow.
Yeah.
Does so much. The idea, I haven't like actually, you have to be careful when you answer questions like this, because if you say you like someone and then you don't know that much about them, a lot of times you can feel, but Woody Guthrie, you know, definitely.
Yeah.
From like even just like an American history kind of standpoint. And I've actually been a little bit relieved that we get some extended time off the road, to make a confession about that. But just the other day, now I'm waking up thinking, like, I can't wait until we can get back out there and to see what these communities are like post COVID-19. Like, what are people going to be like?
Yeah.
I'm really excited for that.
We're excited to be able to go listen to you again soon, for sure. And I know time is short. I did want to make sure to talk to you about two issues I know are near and dear to you that I want to make sure to give you a platform on here. And of course, you know that I agree with you on, and that's mental health and also equality issues that impact you and the LGBT community. I would love to hear you talk about those things, because I know they're close to your heart, Sarah, and I just want to make sure that we get that in.
Thank you very much, Connor. Yeah. And thank you for providing, you know, this platform for people to speak in a intentional way about these issues, because I think a lot of times they come up in interviews, but you're never really sure, and you don't know who you're talking to either. Like, they might really disagree with you, and it's just a weird thing. So this has been really enjoyable. Yeah, I think I can kind of relate these two issues, mental illness and equality issues, for LGBTQ people, because I kind of think the solution is similar, not solution, but I think moving in the right direction looks similar for both things. And that's just plain talking about it and educating people about it. With equality stuff, what I've noticed is that, and I've noticed this in my own life, and I've noticed it in my friends' lives, where you kind of get in this bubble of reality. You know, most gay people I know are friends with people that are okay with gay people. Like, why would you be friends with people who's not? And I feel like people have forgotten how much ground we still need to cover and how hard it still can be to be gay. It's also subtle. My parents believe that being gay is a sin that is worthy of eternal damnation, you know, like that.
Wow.
It's just the truth. And a lot of people believe that, and to have to face that, or to start a new job and have to come out there, and you just really never know what people are going to think about it, or that they're going to label you the gay person. Or I just like to remind people that there's still these things, and there's other places in the world where it's punishable by death. So let's celebrate how far we have come, but let's not forget how hard we still need to fight. And I would equate that to feminism as well. There seems to be this general forgetfulness, for generational forgetfulness, where like from one generation to the next, the new one doesn't see how much fighting the generation before them had to do to get to where they are now. And they kind of throw it away. They don't realize what it means. And that's how you still have this funny idea that feminists are all these like butch angry women. Like, the idea that still exists is proof in itself that we still need feminism. We still need a movement to push forward equality for women. That feminism is, that's even like kind of like a dirty word, right? Like, you know what,
yeah.
I've asked people, do you consider yourself a feminist? And they say no, but like, I'm all for women. And it's like, well, then you're a fucking feminist. Like,
well, it just, the stereotyping of people to minimize them is one aspect, I think, of what you're talking about. And yet we do live in this world where the Equal Rights Amendment's not been ratified. equal pay legislation can't pass. I mean, I featured equal pay legislation proudly in my campaign because the guy I was running against, you know, had voted against it every time. And it just, it's, these issues do break your heart. And the arguments against them today are sometimes more subtle than they used to be because of the times we're in. I guess that's some progress, but gosh, we have so much further to go when you look at equality racially and gender terms and sexual identity and sexual preference and orientation. You know, it's just not real hard. I mean, can't we all be treated equally? Can't we all treat each other equally? Can't we have a world that recognizes our common humanity and doesn't treat people differently based on these things that we're talking about that are really don't impact our common shared humanity at all? And I just got to go on a rant here because, you know, obviously I can't relate to the experience that you have had, but going on the campaign trail and having so many close friends, you know, it just frustrates me so much to meet people who do believe what you said a minute ago, that gay people are going to go to hell and condemned to eternal damnation and are second-class citizens and shouldn't. I mean, give me a break. And again, the same thing applies to gender terms and racial terms too. It's just not hard, but it's really heartbreaking to go to another of my favorite artists who I listen to a lot. You know, Brandi Carlile's song, The Joke, is so powerful. I've heard her play it live many times. And I really appreciate you and her and others for giving voice and perspective to this issue because it's so important for, you know, the gay kid in small town Arkansas or small town Wisconsin who is in a home that believes that. That's a tough road. That's a road I can't fully understand or appreciate, but I know this, I know it's not fair, and I know we need to do something about that in this country.
Yeah, to be that young and to be facing this teaching that there's this part of you that's so, I mean, your sexuality or your gender identity is so, like, it's so central to who you are, and to be taught that that part of you is filthy, is abuse. I mean, it's of the level of child abuse that we send people to prison for. And I'm not saying that I think of my parents that way, or that I think of all who are against homosexuality that way, but I'm just saying it's that important of an issue.
The shame and the deep wound that that inflicts, you know, we all carry these wounds, but that shame and that deep wound is something obviously I don't understand, but I try to appreciate it. And you do. And it's, yeah, I think the point that you're making is that we have to, as a society, and this is another, again, a point that emanates from your music on any issue and from your lyrics and obviously from your passionate views, that we just got to recognize our shared humanity and not wound each other and not shame each other and not create these deep cuts that stick with people. We've instead got to, through love, lift everybody up and lend a helping hand to a stranger, which is just not hard. If we can recognize we're all human and seek to spread love and not hate or judgmentalism, gosh, you know. But I'm sitting here saying that, just going on a rant, and we are sitting here with your music that says that so beautifully.
Show me the moment when I don't give a fuck. Love is love, oh, love is enough. Show me the moment when I'm in ecstasy, oh, sacred knowing. Love is all we need, oh, love is all we need.
In this podcast, we've taken a deep dive into Modern Man and American Poor. We didn't really talk about it, but we touched on Ain't No Difference, Golden Sky, so many great songs. And I just encourage everybody out there to check out your music, buy some records right now, because your stuff is so great, Sarah. And I just really appreciate your courage and everything you stand for.
Thank you very much, Connor.
Yeah, you bet. And I want to make sure to tell everybody here, as we're winding up, go to deadhorses.net. Also, go to y'all's YouTube channel. There's some really great shows on there as y'all can tell, I've been living your band here lately. There's an audio tree session. That's what, 30 minutes, Sarah, or something like that?
Something like that, yep.
It's a great show, great live show as we're staying in our homes and not able to see live music. Check that out. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook, putting some good stuff out there. Pull them up, listen to them, and help support them in this time, because their message and their music is something we need more of in this world. So thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Connor. Good talking.
Definitely. Enjoyed it.
I'm Connor Eldridge with the Shut Up and Sing podcast, and I hope you'll join us for our next episode. Make sure to follow Shut Up and Sing podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to be part of the discussion and to know when we drop new episodes. You can also visit shutupsing.com.